Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lost and Found by D.A. Young, narrated by Mari. Prologue. 1994, Las Vegas, Nevada.
I like you, kid.
Bonnie Canton, the talent manager for Club Heaven, declared in her gravelly smoker's voice as she looked the tall, slender young woman up and down. She was definitely a looker, with her deep brown skin, long, reddish-brown curls, and luminescent hazel eyes. But her body wasn't exactly the stuff that would drive their clientele wild. Clad in a pink leotard, all of her lacking assets were on display. She had small breasts, no hips, long, coltish legs, and a forgettable ass. Bonnie's boss, the owner of the club, David Rossini, was looking for tits, hips, and ass on steroids. The more the merrier was his motto.
You got a lot of moxie coming in here knowing good and well your ass ain't 21.
Threateningly, she waved the driver's license in her hand at the young woman.
I don't give a damn what this piece of plastic says. I can smell the gel bait coming off you, Eliza Carlton. Now level with me about your age, because you're cute, but not cute enough to catch a case over, sweetie.
I am 21,
Eliza burst out, steeling herself not to cry. She needed a job in the worst way, and Paula, her downstairs neighbor, had mentioned that her job, the hot new strip joint called Club Heaven, was hiring when Eliza inquired.
Listen, girl, I feel for your home situation.
Paula grimaced with pity in her eyes that Eliza refused to acknowledge. Everyone in the apartment complex knew of the Carlton siblings in apartment 8B and their situation, otherwise known as Ingrid Carlton, their strung-out prostitute mother. Paula handed her a slip of paper and $40. Stubbornly, Eliza tried to refuse the money. Paula had done more than enough for her and her siblings, but her neighbor shook her head with an expression that was just as stubborn.
You can pay me back when you start making money, Eliza. Take that cash and go see my homie, Slim Mike. He'll hook you up with a fake ID, then come back and see me. I'll hook your face up with a more mature look. Can you dance?
Not really, Eliza confessed with embarrassment. At Paula's disbelieving look, she grew defensive.
What? Because I'm black, I'm supposed to turn into Michael Jackson when I hear a beat? Despite the myth, not all black people can dance, Paula. But I promise you, I'm teachable.
She shrugged carelessly.
How hard could it be?
Paula looked her up and down, scornfully.
Dancing is an art form, little girl. You have to be able to feel the music and relate to it. When I'm in front of an audience, my job is to lure them in with my talent. Why do you think I was hired at Club Heaven? Rossini doesn't just hire any trick with a big ass, you know, and the money is real good. You keep your mouth shut and pay attention, and you might learn something new.
Eliza obeyed. And now here she was, standing in front of this woman, who greatly resembled Ursula the Sea Witch, begging for a chance to shake her underage ass. She wanted to die of mortification, but currently couldn't afford the luxury of having any self-respect right. All Eliza could think about was having enough money to take her younger brother Graham and their baby sister Georgina away from their current lifestyle.
Oh yeah, honey?
Bonnie challenged with raised eyebrows. Eliza met her gaze head-on without flinching. The room was silent as they stared each other down. It was a skill she'd perfected at home when confronting one of Ingrid's boyfriends or clients. They wanted Eliza to be scared of them, preyed on her fear, but they didn't count on the razor blades she kept handy or her lack of sleep. It was hard functioning with no sleep, yet it didn't bother Eliza. She could sleep when they were safe and far away from the negligence and abuse of Ingrid. As Eliza expected, Bonnie blinked first. With an admiring smile for the young woman's gall, she heaved herself out of her chair and ambled toward her office door.
All right, kid. If that's the story you're sticking to, I'm gonna give you one shot to wow me. Move your ass.
Eliza kept her face neutral, but inside, she was jumping for joy. Carefully, she teetered after Bonnie, in the ridiculously high heels Paula had lent her.
Feet don't fail me now, she pleaded silently, and tried to keep up,
down the hallway to the main floor of the club. David Rossini watched the girl from his office window as she sat dejectedly on the back steps of his club. She gingerly touched her forehead, and as if it hurt too much, quickly yanked her hand away. Suddenly, she bent down and yanked off the hot pink stilettos that had almost ended her life. Viciously, she hurled them at the brick wall in front of her. David winced when one bounced off the wall and came back to hit her in the face, almost as if the universe was saying, "Right back at you." She shrieked from the pain, holding her hands up to her injured face, and cursed a blue streak. "Damn, that had to hurt." Darth Vader-like breathing filled his office when Bonnie entered. She came to stand next to him and exclaimed,
"She's still out there. I got her an ice pack for her head. Thank goodness she's alive. That dumbass idiot could have broken her fucking neck. I don't even want to think about what would happen to us if a minor was found paralyzed or dead in a strip club."
"Her driver's license says she's 21," David pointed out mildly. He grunted when Bonnie hit him on the arm with the ice pack she'd made and gave him a scathing look.
"Cut the bullshit, Davy. That kid's as legal as I am Janet Jackson. Don't you even think about it."
His tone was forged in steel when he interrupted her. "Don't give me orders, Bonnie. In case you've forgotten, I own this bitch. You work for me, not the other way around. Now get an HR packet together for her. I'll be bringing her back to see you shortly." Bonnie looked from the girl sitting on the steps to her boss. She was years older than him, and far more seasoned than these young girls who fluttered their lashes when he came around. Yet even she couldn't deny having a soft spot for the tall, brooding Italian, not in a lustful way, but more as a son. For 15 volatile years, she'd been his late father's, mob boss Angelo Rossini, mistress, before he suddenly cast Bonnie and Ferenzo, younger cousin, aside. He'd put them out of his life with no warning, like they were yesterday's garbage. She was still dusting herself off the curb in shock while he moved in her much younger replacement. David took her in. For that, Bonnie would forever be grateful. She'd helped him with his homework and taken him to the movies and circus when his father had no time for him, and he and Ferenzo had become great friends. When he was sick, Bonnie made him her mother's famous chicken tortellini soup and took him to the doctor. And now, it was his turn to take care of her, at his insistence. He bought her a condo and paid all of her expenses. When he decided to open Club Heaven, he hired Bonnie to be the talent manager. Together, they made a formidable team. Now, as she watched him staring at Eliza Carlton, Bonnie was a little worried at the way he fixated on the young girl. It was almost as if David couldn't stop himself. She didn't give a fuck if he took care of her or not. She was going to speak her mind.
"I'll get the damn paperwork together. Be careful, Davy," Bonnie warned, holding the ice pack toward him. "She's not worth doing time for."
David said nothing. He took the ice pack from her and left Bonnie praying that he knew what he was doing.
"Who the hell was I kidding, thinking I could do this?" Eliza muttered,
trying to unsuccessfully wipe the dust and scratch marks from the stilettos, a.k.a. death traps. Throwing them at the brick wall had done considerable damage to her friend's favorite shoes. Eliza could only hope that Paula would forgive her. As Prince's Diamonds and Pearls played in the background, Eliza had inhaled deeply before attempting to strut seductively toward the stripper pole. Unfortunately, she tripped on her own feet, and arms flailing, Eliza hurtled forward. Her face hit the pole, and blinded with pain, she dropped to the floor. The music abruptly halted. As Eliza sat there feeling foolish, and like her head would explode at any second, the room erupted with jeering, condescending, mean girl laughter from the other auditionees. Only when a man's deep voice boomed, "Enough!" did the room fall silent. Burning with humiliation and anger, Eliza stumbled to her feet, grabbing the offending heels, and head held high, she exited the stage without looking at anyone. Eliza walked back to the same door that she used to enter the club and sat down on the stairs as failure seeped into her skin uncomfortably. She needed this job. Paula said the owner was a good man and treated all the dancers fairly. He didn't take a cut of the girl's money and even provided health care benefits. But Eliza had blown it trying to be something she wasn't. Now she'd have to work a couple of jobs to put her plan in motion, which meant her stay in purgatory had just been extended. The thought made her stomach churn with dread. Ingrid's latest boyfriend, Arthur, was a behemoth of a man who seemed unable to take his lecherous eyes off of Eliza, causing Ingrid to fly into a rage whenever he complimented her. To punish her oldest daughter, she would withhold lunch and grocery money from her kids. Not once did it occur to the dumb bitch that the bastard was being inappropriate and predatory toward her child. Thank God for Paula and her generosity. Eliza swiped the trickle of blood from her nose and slowly stood up. Her stomach rumbled loudly, reminding her that she hadn't eaten since last night. She had $2 in her pocket. That was enough to buy a bag of chips and a soda. Except Eliza couldn't do either, because she had to pay for bus fare. Her life was full of damned if you do's or don'ts, and she really wished that for once something good would happen to her with no strings attached. Just once. Could things not be so bad? She whispered, because if she allowed her voice to go higher, it would turn into the never-ending, agonizing scream that unfortunately summed up her life. Please. Well, that depends on how you look at things, Eliza. The voice came from behind her, and instantly she knew it was him. Her savior from the hecklers. The man with the beautiful black wavy hair and expensive suit. His cologne exuded the same thing he did, money and power. As Eliza nervously walked to the stage, he'd sat quietly, watching her with hawk-like intensity. He came to stand tall in front of her, causing Eliza to gaze up at him. His dark brown eyes gave away nothing, and his stance was relaxed, but she could sense the war raging within him. This man was fighting an uphill personal battle and determined not to lose. She knew the feeling. However, unlike Eliza, he seemed just a lot more in control of his shit. He smiled, reminding Eliza that he was a deeply attractive man, a fact that made her leery. Good-looking men had no conscience. They were depraved bastards, complete sociopaths who relied on their looks and charm to get what they wanted. Eliza knew and had seen it firsthand with her father, Russell, before he had led his wife down the path of destruction and forever turned her into Ingrid to her children. Forgive me. We haven't been properly introduced. My name is David Rossini, and I'd like to make you a job offer you would be a fool to refuse. Eliza looked down at the hand he held out to her. It was large, and the nails were trimmed short and clean. No flashy rings adorned his hands, nor did he have any fingernails that were longer than others that could be used to snort drugs. There was a very expensive-looking chrome watch on his wrist, but there were no diamonds anywhere. She took his hand and immediately pushed his charcoal-gray suit sleeve up to expose his arm. Eliza flipped it up to examine the inside of it before doing the same to the other arm. He stood still, allowing her to inspect him. No track marks adorned either arm. Eliza sighed inwardly with relief before pushing both sleeves down and grasping his hand tightly. It's very nice to meet you, Mr. Rossini. Instinctively, Eliza knew she could trust him. I would very much like to hear your proposal. Up close, he could see that underneath her expertly applied makeup, she was a natural beauty. Her pretty hazel eyes burned with strength and determination. David had sensed Eliza's revulsion for what she was auditioning for, but was resilient in going through with it nonetheless. Not for herself, he guessed, but because she'd been left with no other choice. Eliza Carlton was doing what she needed to do in order to accomplish her goal, and that filled David Rossini with satisfaction. Loyalty was everything to him. It seemed Eliza Carlton had it in spades. 2014, Boston, Massachusetts.
David sealed the envelope and handed it to his butler. "Take this to the post office immediately, Anton." "Yes, sir," he said respectfully, and promptly left the office. A woman's laugh, followed by a child's infectious one, drew his attention. David got up from his desk and moved to the larger French windows. His wife was sitting under the large oak tree in the garden, reading. They'd been married 20 years, and in that time, she'd come a long way from the young but hardened-by-life girl he'd met at Club Heaven. Eliza had brought him so much joy in their time together. It had been David's greatest joy, pleasure, and privilege to mentor her. Elegantly poised, she wore the clothes they selected together very well. They'd traveled the world, and he'd watched her devour every experience voraciously. However, she still hadn't truly lived. At least, not until she'd met Detective Wade Holloway 7 years ago. David had never seen Eliza so brilliantly alive as when she confessed to meeting someone. With eyes sparkling and flushed cheeks, she couldn't stop smiling as she talked about this man who'd, the way she told it, walked on water. Never in a million years had David ever expected to be jealous. Their relationship was not based on intimacy. Yet he could see from the dreamy, faraway look on Eliza's face that she was no longer with David. It would only be a matter of time before she asked for her freedom and was out of his life completely. David realized that ultimately, he just couldn't have that. Eliza meant too much to him.
"And what would be so wrong with that, David? Your problem is that you want people to live your lives, but on your terms. You are not a god. Stop trying to manipulate everyone around you. What you have done is reprehensible. I can no longer be a part of your psychotic, delusional world."
The words, spewed with acrimony and vitriol from his closest confidant, Fiorenzo, had haunted him every day since he'd heard them 7 years ago. A movement caught his eye. David smiled as he watched a serene Eliza twine her fingers with the small hand that reached up to point at something in the book she was reading from. Eliza answered, and David smiled again as he heard the sweet, high-pitched giggle that their 6-year-old daughter Camille gave. In response, Eliza dropped the book and pulled the precious little girl into her lap for what she called a tickle fest. David's heart ached, noticing Eliza's radiantly joy-filled face. With Camille was the only time she looked that way, and he knew that she was completely unaware of this fact. When he'd moved them here, David knew that she was suffering from a broken heart, just like he was. Having that in common, he'd taken drastic measures and done the unthinkable to ensure they stayed together, reasoning to himself that everything would be fine because misery loved company, right? If it wasn't for Camille, they would have surely wasted away. It was terribly wrong and cowardly, David acknowledged to himself, but he couldn't stand the thought of being alone to face his demons. If he knew nothing else about Eliza, he knew she was loyal. She would never leave him on her own. But the time had come to set her free, because his time was coming to an end. David had known something was different when he woke up this morning. He'd been feeling off all week. Today in particular, the feeling had intensified. That's why he'd pinned his last letter in the hopes that it would be read, that he could somehow atone for his sins. He pressed the housekeeping button on the wall by the door. "Yes, Mr. Rosini." "My wife is in the garden. Please let her know I'd like to speak to her in my study." "I'd like you to have Camille's nanny take her for some ice cream immediately."
"Yes, sir."
David sat down to wait, then immediately rose to his feet. Something was wrong. He felt too hot. An excruciating pain in his head caused him to emit an anguished cry, and David collapsed in his chair, waiting for it to diminish. It didn't. Instead, the torture grew inhumanly unbearable, seeming to go on forever, until David felt nothing at all. When Eliza entered his study 10 minutes later, after kissing Camille goodbye and wishing for her to have a great adventure, she found her husband slumped over his desk, dead. Chapter 1. Present, Baymore, Maryland. Eliza needed a moment, just one to herself, away from the loud music and boisterous crowd enjoying the celebration. Even though it was 9:30 at night, the party was still going strong. People continued to stop by her aunt and uncle's house to congratulate Georgina and Max on their engagement. Eliza was ecstatic for her sister because Max was exactly what she needed. You could just see in Georgina's face all the love, trust, and respect she had for him. He was a wonderful guy, not to mention extremely easy on the eyes. Just being around them made Eliza feel good to witness their love and unshakable bond. Yes, her sister was indeed a lucky woman. Her relationship was the second great love story of this family. Uncle Nate and Aunt Val were definitely a tough act to follow. At one time, Eliza thought that she had a love like that, possibly even exceeded it. How wrong she'd been. Hers had shattered around her, the broken pieces punctured, then embedded inside her skin like teeny, tiny splinters that couldn't be pulled out. The torture of living with that feeling had been unbearable. She had functioned with it for months, until her newborn daughter had been placed in her arms for the first time. Camille. She looked across the backyard to where her 8-year-old daughter sat playing goldfish with her Uncle Graham. Her beautiful, darling girl. Eliza had walked through fire to have her. She'd been worth the heartache. As if he knew she would be watching, Graham looked up and met her eyes. She shook her head slightly at his questioning look and motioned she was going outside. He nodded and went back to devoting his attention to Camille. Eliza smiled as the sounds of her daughter's delighted giggles reached across the room and wrapped around her heart. She entered the house through the back door and didn't stop moving until she reached the front door, opened it, and stepped out onto the empty porch. Instantly, the cool air hit Eliza, and she shivered, yet refused to go back in to retrieve her lightweight jacket. Instead, she went to sit on the love seat, enclosed in the shadows of Aunt Val's rose trellises, and study the sky. Tonight, it varied in shades of blue, ranging from baby blue to midnight. The incandescent full moon played peekaboo among the shifting clouds, and the stars shone bright like diamonds. As Eliza stared at the cluster of clouds dancing around the moon, she thought about how good it felt to be surrounded by family. She'd visited Baymore twice when Georgie lived there, but after what happened in New York, David was reluctant to leave their Boston compound and had insisted family come to visit them instead. Back home, it was only Eliza and Camille rambling about in their estate, and her daughter had hinted on more than one occasion that she wouldn't mind moving to this small town permanently. They had only been in Baymore, Maryland for 2 days, but Camille had already made several friends at the Easter celebration that Eliza had been unable to attend due to an emergency meeting at a client's house. Maybe it was time to consider moving. Truth be told, as a freelance architect, her business could be run from anywhere. Her family was here, and David had left Eliza with more money than she knew what to do with. David. God, how she missed him. He had been her friend, mentor, and in the end, a great father to Camille. After his death 2 years ago, Eliza became a recluse in their community, resigning from all social positions except for the youth programs that Camille was involved in. The clouds shifted, allowing the moon its right to glow brightly, bathing the entire porch in a gilded sheen, except where Eliza sat hidden from it. The symbolic moment was not lost on her. It seemed fitting, considering how she now lived her life, away from the world, hidden in shadows. Eliza laughed softly, thinking that she made the perfect vampire. It hadn't always been this way, though. Like the porch, once, she too had been bathed in moonlight every chance she got. Lover's light is what he had called it. Her soft limbs tangled with his stronger muscular ones, their skin covered in a fine mist of perspiration as they flew together, soaring through the sky to land among the clouds. Suddenly, Eliza recalled that famous line from Batman, "Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?" Oh, she had.
a dance that had set her soul on fire as she twirled and whirled to the rhythm of two hearts in sync, beating furiously only for one another. Eliza had never been able to forget his devastating kisses or the way he possessed her body. Their passion for each other had been all-consuming, obliterating reason, and in the end, it had almost destroyed Eliza. It was on nights like this that she thought of them together, and all that had been lost by betrayal. Almost a decade had passed since Eliza last saw him, yet every now and then she would notice a man similar in build and hair color, and her heart would race. But then he would turn, and the complete stranger would pale far beyond in comparison. A car pulled up to the curb. She glanced through the bushes to see a tall, broad-shouldered man exit and start down the walkway. The clouds moved again, and all went dark. He didn't seem to be aware of Eliza, sitting still, as he moved steadily up the stairs. His cologne reached her first. It was spicy and dark, shrouded in mystery, just like him. Eliza wondered if she should say something. As he knocked on the door, the clouds lifted again. He turned to take in the change, and she forgot to breathe. The years had been good to him. He was even better looking than her detailed memory recollected. Not conventionally handsome, but he oozed sex appeal. His once shoulder-length blonde hair was now shorter, a little below his ears and slicked back. The brows, thick and straight, sat above intense dark blue eyes that were closely set. His nose was strong and slightly crooked, cheekbones high. He had sensually firm lips surrounded by a dark blonde trimmed beard. Underneath the dark suit, Eliza knew was a body made for sinning. Her heart was beating so loudly, she thought he would be able to hear it. "He can't hurt you anymore," Eliza told herself. She was a different person now. Stronger, harder, and not so gullible. She must have made a sound, because all of a sudden, he was looking, with narrowed eyes, directly where she sat. Slowly he approached, and his eyes went wide, first with recognition, followed quickly by disbelief. She rose to her feet, tall and erect, with her head held high, appearing calm, even though her heart was racing. "Hello, Wade. It's been a long time." 6 hours earlier. New York, New York. "Why do we have to wait an entire year to see each other?" The brunette whined plaintively as she tried to press herself against Wade Holloway's bare back. She attempted to wrap her arms around him, but he deftly evaded her grasp. "I could always come and visit you too, Wade." He bit back a vicious curse at her words. "Because this is the only time I get up here, Whitney. You know that's how it goes. That's the deal we made. I have no intentions of changing it. If you don't like it..." Wade let the unspoken threat of breaking things off hang in the air, not really giving a shit if she chose to or not. Why was she trying to change what they had going after all these years? He sighed with frustration, knowing it wasn't Whitney's fault he was in such a shitty mood. This was his annual vacation that he took to pay his respects at his deceased partner, Jimmy Corelli's grave. As usual, the trip broke Wade and left him feeling all kinds of fucked up with the unresolved issues surrounding his death. He'd attempted, again, to see Rita, Jimmy's widow, but she'd yet to grant him a visit since screaming those damning words at Wade so long ago after the funeral. They were forever rooted in his mind and tore at his soul. The rest of his yearly vacation consisted of getting rip-roaring drunk after the visit and hooking up with Whitney, an old flame. Except this year's trip was different, due to his best friend Max Hayes's engagement party. Wade managed to make himself presentable 2 days ago because the last thing he wanted to do was embarrass the happy couple at such a momentous occasion in their lives by showing up lit as fuck. Normally, sobering up was no problem for Wade, but he'd had a lot on his mind as of late, especially since meeting Georgina Carlton, Max's pretty fiancé. Wade wasn't sure if it was seeing his friend so happy and content or just the way the couple interacted, but something
Sample complete. Ready to continue?